Blog Talk Radio.
Ready, steady, go!
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dynamic Dose of Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live on the air on the Seika Network from Seattle, Washington, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got a great show tonight, but before we get the show rolling, I'd like to bring on my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sisu Robert Deal. Sisu Bob, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Sisu Rusty. It's a wonderful day. It's maybe 80s today. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles. You know, my daughter went to a couple parties this weekend. One of them was
where?
Went to a couple parties.
Oh, okay.
And one of them was Friday night. She went to a quinceañera, bar mitzvah, sweet 16. It's for Hispanic girls who turned 15.
Oh,
well,
I didn't know that. Okay.
This party's supposed to end at 12 o'clock, and around 10:30, she starts texting me. And have you ever gotten those texts where you can actually hear the whining? They're actually whining through the text at me. She says, "I'm having so much fun. Can you pick me up at 1 o'clock?" And I'm giving her a hard time over this. No, I'm kind of tired, knowing I'm going to give in. I said, "Okay, tell you what, I'll split the difference with you. I'll pick you up at 12:30. She said, and very begrudgingly, she said, "Oh, fine, whatever. My phone's going to die. I'll talk to you later." I can hear this through the phone.
Oh, geez.
And the funny thing was, she texts me at 11:15 saying, "All my friends are leaving, so I'm going home now." I'm like, after a half an hour of bantering back and forth, she ends up leaving early.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that just like a teenager, right? Don't come get me as long as I'm having fun. But now that everyone's gone.
Yeah, now I'm going home. I'm taking my ball and going home.
Oh, geez.
And teenage women, you got to love them because you can't leave them down in Compton.
Yeah. You know, I mean, kids these days are so lucky because my curfew was 10. And if I was later than that, my dad would get on the phone and he would call everyone that I knew, and it was a requirement that my parents had every phone number of every person that they allowed me to go to their house, you know, that kind of thing. And the phone would start ringing, and I'd be like, "Oh crap, I gotta get out of here!" It's like, "Oh no!" Oh, see, teenagers these days, they gotta count their blessings. Boy, I tell you what, a midnight curfew,
right.
Come on!
there were no cell phones when we were kids. There was no computer. There was no internet. There was no games. You went out and rode your bike. You didn't wear a helmet.
Right.
You didn't wear a seatbelt. Your mother smoked when you were in the car. Your mother smoked when she was pregnant.
Right.
My mother
right.
probably had a double scotch when I was born.
I can't find my drum rim shot for that. And I can't think of a smart alecky remark, so...
well, I know you, Sifu, and I know your mother doesn't smoke, but I knew she probably took up drinking just after you were born.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't with all the medical bills that they had to pay for me and junk. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and there was no insurance when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
You paid the full boat.
Right. Right, I remember that. As we all sit here,
I'm looking forward to the show. We're going to have a wonderful show tonight.
We are. I just want to take a second here and introduce our guest for tonight. Our guest tonight is a holistic health consultant and martial arts instructor who is also an author, a well-known author, as a matter of fact, historian and editor of various publications dealing with the martial arts. He specializes in the history of Filipino martial arts. He's also trained in a variety of systems and styles, but his primary focuses are in, here's the list. You ready for this, everyone? Calis Ilustrisimo, traditional Filipino I don't know why I put that in there. I think that was everyone knows what Cully is, right? I can't even read. Five Ancestor Kung Fu, Wing Chun. I think I'm going to miss some here. Taekwondo, Shiho Karao Ryu Jujutsu Savat, American Kempo Karate, Modern Arnis, Cinco Tero Arnis, and San Shangong. He's also studied in the following systems or styles for less than 5 years, and they include Chuka Shaolin, I hope I said that right, Silat Seni Gayong, Silat Seni Harimau, Penchak Silat, Lati, Silam Bam, Doblete Rapion Arnis, Scientific, Lightning Scientific Arnis, Sinawali, Chikundo Concept, Muay Thai, Boxing, Wrestling, and Fencing. Whew, deep breath. So it is
my... And this is why I have you do the announcements for those kind of words, because I could never do this.
Well, because it's if I can practice my Qigong and take a deep breath before I do the introduction.
Right.
So it's me and the Sifu Robert Dale's greatest honor to introduce Mr. Mark Wiley to our show. Welcome, Guru Mark. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing great. I'm listening to you guys, and I'm just laughing. Laughing and laughing. And I have all the comebacks. You know, when Bob's talking about all his mom drinking and doing heroin and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, well, that explains a lot. I mean, right there.
I was waiting for somebody to say something. Oh, now we know why.
You know, if you needed proof as to why we don't do this to our kids now, it's just look at us.
Exactly.
Right.
We're all crooked.
We are. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that just means I need more coffee because I could have come
right.
up with that. But
being too polite.
Man. I know. I normally aren't, but I blame it on the lack of coffee.
That's right.
Well, what we'd like, Guru Mark, is for you to be kind of like a guest co-host. Because we normally do shout-outs and announcements and all sorts of weird news and stuff like that. So feel free to chime in and have some fun with us because this first segment is really fun. So for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Call in and join the fun. Later on, also, if you want to talk to Mr. Wiley, you can actually also go to our chat board on our Blog Talk Radio show marquee. All you got to do is scroll down a little bit, and there's a chat board there that says, hi, everybody. And just go ahead and write your questions there if you're too chicken to call in.
By the way, Guru Mark, just before Sifu called you to bring you onto the show, we decided that all listeners who are authors need to get us a signed copy of their new book.
You got it.
I already
Facebook,
have one, though.
Facebook, well, you know what? I've got 12 of them. Pick another one off Amazon, and I'll send it to you.
Aww. Okay.
Oh, yep. That's so nice.
So, Bob, you just have to message me your address, both of you, message me your mailing addresses, and I'll send them out tomorrow.
Oh,
thank you.
You want.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thank you.
With an invoice for double the price. It's fine.
Of course.
Of course.
Check that.
Of course.
That's right.
Of course. I do want to shout out about your newest book, Mastering the Extreme of Disarms. I was just telling Bob that I got mine last week or a week and a half ago. And I was telling Bob, I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't wait to ask him about the process that it took to get sequential photos in the interview. And Bob's like, oh, my God, really? He's got, like, all these pictures. I'm like, oh, dude. This is
the last 104 pages, it's 252 pages, all the beginning stuff is the first third of it is all the theory and concept that is generic to the disarming in the Philippines, you know, the Philippine styles of disarming with photographs of old masters, most of them deceased, some of them still alive, demonstrating in a single shot the principle that I'm trying to show. Like the gate or the range or the technique or whatever. So I have them and from all different Filipino styles demonstrating so you can see that these principles are universal to all FMA styles. And then I go in the middle part and I demonstrate, like, I don't know, 45 or 50 techniques from each of the four categories or five categories of disarming methods, showing how the concept can be applied in many different ways. And then the last 104 pages of the book is all grandmasters or headmasters in 35 different Philippine arts demonstrating their own techniques and sequences.
Mm.
And to show how it's all universal, However, but the show where the reader can see the differences side by side. If you're in a seminar, you can't really tell. You're like, oh, yeah, we did a disarm like this in this style, and we have a disarm like that in this style. But when you see them side by side, you're like, oh, the range is different. The gate is different. The lead leg is different. Oh, he twists on the fourth move, and this guy does it on the second move. Wonder what that means. And I didn't put any commentary in there because I wanted leave some room for the reader to start thinking about it for themselves and seeing what they like and don't like. And most of those pictures I took in my research trips, I made 15 trips to the Philippines, and many of the masters in those photos back there have been passed away, 8 or 10 years or more ago, 15 years ago, and I just feel so fortunate to have been able to capture that generation of masters. Who were really the ones responsible after World War II for bringing it out to the public, and some of them weren't even known. But I got, and I didn't even know I had all of those pictures. And I was writing, I finished the book, and I thought, man, would it be great if I had like one or two shots of some, Antonio Ilustrissimo or Remy Presas or Angel Cabalas or somebody, Leo Hirón, I don't know, some of the older teachers, Cañetes, to put in there to show some disarming, just like a page or two of something. And I ended up having 100 pages worth of photographs that I had taken of doing disarms. But and then I saw I had all these ones doing double stick and single stick and a spotty daga. And sword, and I thought, wow, here I can do a whole series of books that would be in the same format now, because I have all these pictures in my archives that hadn't been published yet, that are just have such enormous historical value and cultural value that I think would really add to the understanding of the art and the documentation of these rarer systems.
Wow.
So everybody, go to Amazon and buy it.
Yeah, in fact, listeners, what I'll be doing during our soft break a little bit later is posting a link to the Amazon page that has Mastering Eskrima Disarms on it, so that way everyone can just do a one-click on there. It's a great book.
I
have it right here, and it's really cool. It's really cool. Awesome. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's do a few shout-outs. I'd like to put a shout-out to the Seattle Chinese Garden. The Seattle Chinese Garden is a nonprofit organization that has spent the last, almost 10, 15 years trying to put together a traditional Chinese garden setting right in the middle of Seattle. It's actually really cool because you go in there and you forget that you're in the middle of a suburb. You're like, what's going on? It's really cool. And I do want to thank them a lot because they hosted my event for World Tai Chi Day yesterday. And it was really, really cool. It was cold, I guess I should say. It was really, really cold for Seattle for the month of April. But we had about 20 people come out. And I want to put a shout out also to all those people that came out to join me in some Qigong and Tai Chi to observe World Tai Chi Day, and also to thank the Seattle Chinese Garden. I did post some pictures up on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, so if anyone's interested in kind of getting a glimpse of the main courtyard of the garden and to get some pictures of us doing our Tai Chi, go ahead and check that out. That's going to be on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. It's really cool. All right, we have an event that was announced on our Facebook group page by Michael Mershad, and this is for the Ultimate Leadership Martial Arts XP 2013. I'm guessing he meant Expo, but it's XP 2013. And this is going to be August 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And even though it's quite a ways ahead, the actual registration for this event actually started yesterday. And this is going to be in Springboro, Ohio, at the Ultimate Leadership Martial Arts Headquarters, located at 261 West Central Avenue in Springboro, Ohio, 45066. And just a short overview of what's going to be going on each day. On the 23rd, that's Friday, there's something that says TBA. So I guess there's going to be some event TBA. And participants get a chance to view regular classes at the headquarters and a meet and greet. So it's a general meet and greet. Now, Saturday, August 24th, is a bunch of school owner seminars. So this is more of a professional event with seminars on how to market your schools and stuff like that, but also actual classes for instructors by other instructors. So we've got seminars by speakers like Mr. John Gayston, Christopher Rappold of Personal Best Karate, Michael Mershad, who is the Ultimate Leadership Martial Arts President, Stacy Sanchez from KickPix, and a lot more. And then the 25th of August is the actual instructor seminars, and you have to be 13 and over in order to attend these seminars. And we've got Mr. John Gayston, Mr. Christopher Rappold, and Mr. Michael Mershad doing these seminars for the instructors. So that's that particular Ultimate Leadership Martial Arts Expo by Michael Mershad, August 23rd, 24th, and 25th in Springboro, Ohio. And I think that's all I have for my shout-outs. How about you, Bob? Do you have any announcements?
Well, I do. I have three shout-outs. One is a little extensive for the Martial Arts History Museum located about a mile in Burbank, California. Mm-hmm. They have two events coming up this Saturday on May 4th. They have Fumio Demura Day, and they have a VIP Don the Dragon Wilson screening. Then on May 5th, they have a Book Fest 2. It's their second one. The first one was in November. This is a Dragon Fest style gathering of martial arts authors, stars, and more. Authors
cool.
include Carl Totten, Jerry Fisher, Donnie Williams, Leo Fong, Douglas Wong, John Greng, Alan Woodman, Jerry O'Gall Wong, Art Macho, and many more. And this is the part I like. This is a free event to all who attend. So if you are in the Burbank area, go check out the museum. It's a great place to go.
Cool.
Our good friend and listener, Elaine Damano, is having a tournament this Saturday, May 4th, 2013, for May Day Classic Spring Inner Dojo Martial Arts Tourney. It's at Umano's Shonru Karate, 5370 Schaefer in Chino, California. Their phone number is 909-591-3136. Or you can email her at ysrk@uzw.blackberry.net. The tickets to compete are $15 presale, $20 at the door for one or both events, kata or kumite. Starts at 9 a.m., kids white through purple, 11:30 a.m., blue, green, and above, and adult sign up at your dojo. All proceeds will benefit the Leadership Cultural Exchange Program. Now, we talked about the next tournament on a couple weeks ago when we had Richard Nunez and Michael Rivera on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Lima Llama Tournament, their 13th Annual International War of the Warriors Martial Arts Championship.
Cool.
This is hosted by Gabriel Zayas and Richard Nunez. The date is July 28, 2013, at the Doubletree Hotel and Resort in Norwalk, 13111 Sycamore Drive in Norwalk. The phone number is 562-863-5555.
Awesome.
And there are my shout-outs for the week.
Awesome. And Guru Mark, do you have any shout-outs? You want to say hi to anyone? Do you have any upcoming events?
Well, I would just like to give a thanks to Brian Agostino, Guru Brian Agostino, with the Bahawana style out here in PA. And he hosted and pulled together the FMA Exchange today, which is partnered up with an FMA Exchange event in Ireland, which is a charity event for different Filipino martial arts instructors. We came together, about seven different instructors today out in Philadelphia, and raised up some money for charity, and taught for 8 hours. I did 2 hours of double stick, and other teachers did, 2 hours of Pikiti Tertia or Inaina Screamo or Hirona Screamo, all the different styles. And it was just such a great event, and the next one will be sometime in October. So we need more and more people. I think we had about 50 people today, so it was really successful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
And from all over, from all over the area. We just like more and more people to come out in October when we do it again so we can raise more money. And you know, really help people who need it. So
very
cool. I just
want
to thank Brian for that. Yeah, Brian's efforts.
Awesome. Shout out to Brian Agostino. Right
Shout
on.
Shout out to Brian. Yeah.
Yay. Awesome.
Yeah,
all right. Okay, where are we at now, Bob? Oh, we are at health news already.
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 Already. What happened? Normally we get into this like 10 minutes in. like we're 20 minutes in. I don't know what happened.
Well, you just can't wait to get into health news, you know.
Yeah, I think it was the talking about moms drinking and our problems.
I know. And you were talking
all
about
right.
eating coffee. So I got some tidbits I can share when you guys run out of health news to talk about. I can share some things.
Awesome, cool. Well, this actual story just kind of jumped out at me. I was just kind of trolling the internet the other day, and I'm sure we've heard this before in our own martial arts classes. Now, when I was coming up, my sensei always taught me that you have to cool down a little bit after a hard sparring session or strenuous exercise. You know, walk around a little bit. You know, that way you won't get sore
right.
the next day, right? Up until like maybe only a couple years ago, I kept hearing that. Hey, you gotta cool down. You know, that way you know blood doesn't pool in your legs and you faint, because that's happened to me, right? But this particular health article that I pulled has to do with is it really that important to cool down after a strenuous workout, and will it really make a difference in muscle soreness or preventing it or what have you? And I found out that apparently, under scientific scrutiny, quote unquote, that apparently none of those beliefs stand up well. And I went, what? So this is why I had to put it on here. So according to this article, in this study that was actually published last year in the Journal of Human Kinetics, a group of 36 active adults undertook a strenuous one-time program of forward lunges while holding barbells. That makes me tired just saying it. Now, it's an exercise almost guaranteed to make even untrained people extremely sore. Now, some of the volunteers warmed up beforehand by pedaling a stationary bicycle at a gentle pace for about 20 minutes, and others didn't warm up but cooled down after the exercise with the same 20 minutes of easy cycling. And the rest just went ahead and lunged, neither warming up or cooling down. Now, the next day, all of the volunteers submitted to a pain threshold test in which their muscles were prodded until they reported discomfort. The volunteers who warmed up before exercising had the highest pain threshold, meaning their muscles were relatively pain-free. Okay. Now, those who had cooled down, on the other hand, had a much lower pain threshold. Their muscles hurt like heck. The cool down group's pain threshold was, as a matter of fact, the same as among the control group. Cooling down had brought the exercisers nothing in terms of pain relief. Now, the available data quite strongly suggests that a cool down does not reduce post-exercise soreness. Or so says Rob Herbert, who is a senior research fellow at Neuroscience Research Australia and senior author of what is probably the foundational study of cooling down in 2007. Now, I didn't know that there was actually a study about cooling down. That's actually kind of cool. But in that particular experiment, healthy adults walked backward downhill on a treadmill for 30 minutes. Backward downhill. I'm still trying to figure that out. Backward downhill on a treadmill. Okay.
Isn't that how you guys in San Francisco walk down those big hills is backwards, I heard.
Oh, really?
San Francisco hills. As opposed to walking forward downhill, you walk backward because it works different muscles or better balance. I don't know.
Huh. I didn't know that. I'd probably just fall down the hill.
I saw that in a movie, and then I thought, I wonder if everyone in San Francisco does that.
You know, I think the next time I'm down there, I'm going to have to find a hill and find one of the big hills, that a funky, twisty hill, and try it.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, they walked downhill on a treadmill backwards for 30 minutes, and that's making my muscles sore. Some of the volunteers first walked forward for 10 minutes to warm up, and others did the same afterward to cool down. And, again, the control is others didn't warm up or cool down. 2 days later, the group had cooled down. The group that had cooled down was every bit as sore as the control group. Oops, sorry, I guess I mistook which was the control group. So given all these findings, then, is there any valid reason to cool down? Now, Andrea Fradkin, associate professor of exercise at Bloomsburg University, says, yes, a cool down has been shown to prevent venous pooling after exercise or the buildup of blood in the veins. And that's what happened to me. You know, I just stopped right after exercise, and all the blood went into my legs, and I just bleep, fell on my face, and no one helped me.
Nice.
No one caught me. They just let me fall on my face. So apparently, if you just stop, all that blood will pull in your lower extremities, and you can get dizzy or do what I did and fall on your face, which is why a lot of people will say, you know, walk around until your heart rate gets to normal and you'll be okay. And that's pretty much what Dr. Fradkin says. You know, just walk around and get your heart rate back to normal. But according to Ross Tucker, a South African physiologist, I can't even say what's going on anymore, coffee.
Wow. Physiologist,
thank you.
And you started reading your notes and you knew what you wanted to say.
I know, right? Now, Ross Tucker said, well, that's not really a cool down,
right,
as most of us would define as the procedure, quote unquote. Now, still, right, yes, a formal cool down provides few confirmed physiological benefits. It might have a scientifically squishy, but nevertheless worthwhile physiological effect. If you've done a very hard track session, it's nice to end with some light jogging, Dr. Tucker says, just to restore a subjective sense of normality to your legs. In other words, mm-hmm, a cool down feels nice. So that was the health news of the day. So apparently there's some little bit of controversy as to whether or not cool down is actually required. So what's your take on that, Guru Mark?
Well, I would think that in the first example that you gave of the people doing the bicycle after the lunges, they do the bicycle, mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm, the reason that they probably hurt or had as much soreness or lactic acid buildup as the control group is because probably the bicycling or the treadmill, I guess it was the stationary bikes,
mm-hmm,
was probably almost as strenuous and kept their heart rate up. And mm-hmm, kept their legs moving longer than their muscles were accustomed to. So it actually just extended their workout and not really cooling them down.
Ah.
So it's like we did lunges and then the stationary bike, and then what? Then they should have had a cool down.
Right.
Which would
right,
have been maybe walking around the gymnasium twice or something, you know.
Mm.
Or a little standing pole, you know. So I would think that maybe the study was a bit flawed if, in fact, on the stationary cycle, it was a little bit too fast or too strenuous or whatever, mm-hmm, or for too long of a period, because if they don't have good cardiovascular, that's even on a light mode, that's going to be a heavy workout for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay. See, listeners, there's a reason why you should be listening to this show.
Yeah, that's right. So we can take apart a study with anecdotes.
I can give you
anecdotes. Yeah. It's so totally unfair, but that's what it is.
Well, you know, that's kind of what me and Sifu Bob like about this show.
Right.
You know, we make it up as we go,
mm-hmm,
and we're not afraid to get a little controversial with some subjects,
yeah,
as opposed to, like, you know, some shows will, you know, want to
mm-hmm,
just be, you know, oh, let's keep everything
hunky-dory.
Yeah.
That's boring.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And me and Bob really don't care.
Right.
we do what most people would want to do and want to talk about,
right,
on a radio show. It's kind of fun. All right, so that's it for our health news. I think it's time for Bob's
Weird News.
Nice.
This one is great.
Okay.
There was a Mormon bishop in Salt Lake City, Utah named Ken Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
The title of the article is Mormon Bishop with Samurai Sword Saves Neighbor from Attack.
Wow.
I saw that.
So the great disturbance in the force.
And basically, Sifu, to sum it up, there was a woman under attack near his home by a man that was stalking her. He pulled out his samurai sword, ran up on this guy, and the guy just took off and set up the fight. But it's like 2 pages long. We can post it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page.
Okay.
good job, Kent. That, you know, smart thinking Bishop, I'm telling
right.
you.
Right. Right. The part that I liked was that when I read the story, I read it I think that same day when it actually got out on the news, right? I guess he pulled out his chapstick and something and just nonchalantly put it on and said, "Yeah, I got his license plate number," and thought, "You're done."
It was great.
I still got time for breakfast.
I know, right? Yeah. I'll be home in time for lunch.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Oh my
god. It was amazing.
You've been waiting to pull that sword out for like 2 decades.
Yeah.
You know, just waiting to pull it out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Kudos for him.
I posted something on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page that I found very, very interesting today. I was with Mike Rivera and Apes Agree in Lima Llama today, and he gave me the Lima Llama family tree.
Oh, I saw that on your site. Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, Ed Parker, Bill Riasaki, Adrian Imperato, Benny Urquidez, Steve Sanders.
Wow.
He gave that to me, and it was actually on glossy photo paper. It was amazing. Just the people
that's
that were
awesome.
There.
Wow.
Yeah. Now I'm going to go right into weird laws. Now, these weird laws are from Missouri. In Missouri, a milkman, I don't know why, but now remember, Guru, Sifu and I have discussed this. For these to be laws, there had to be an issue, right? In Missouri, a milkman may not run on duty.
What on duty? Sucks.
Run. Jog, move fast.
Because he might crash the milk bottles together? What?
That's probably it. They don't break. Now, this is my favorite one. Out of every law I've ever done, in Missouri, drunkenness is considered an inalienable right.
Nice.
<Love it.
laughs> Even if you're on duty serving milk.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
I love it.
And then if you're drinking, you can't run, so it's all good.
Yeah.
That's right. It's all good. It's for nullified. Four women.
What if the drunk guy gives you chocolate milk instead of regular milk, or 2% instead of whole milk? Can you complain?
There you go.
He's drunk. Yeah. He couldn't tell. He gave me my neighbor's order.
Yeah.
In Missouri, four women. Now, that's the number four. Four women may not rent an apartment together.
Nice. Because there's only one bathroom. They all go at the same time.
That's right. I think it's more of a convenience. If you live with more than one woman at a time, you just know.
I didn't even think of that. You know, I read it after he said it. I'm like, I still don't understand why.
you just ask me. I'll tell you.
In Saco,
Missouri, women are forbidden from wearing hats that may frighten timid persons, children, or animals. I've never seen a hat that would scare me.
Well, that sucks.
Oh, my God.
Minors, meaning children, not the minors of that mine a mine. Try to say that when you're drunk. Minors are not allowed to purchase cap pistols. However, they may buy shotguns.
Nice.
They can't buy cap pistols, but damn it, they can buy a 12-gauge anytime they want to.
That's right. Damn it.
It leaves more for the kids. These more
cap kids,
I guess.
I heard a comedian the other day. He said that Walmart you can they will not sell an album or a CD that has anything to do with guns in it, like a rap song.
Uh-huh.
But you can go buy a shotgun at Walmart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you won't go crazy from listening to the lyrics, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what?
Laws and weird news.
Oh my God. What was that, Grandma?
Chris Rock, the comedian, he had a bit where he was talking about the ridiculousness of having the warnings on CDs warnings on the CDs, but how the courts were saying, oh, because of Marilyn Manson or because of this rap artist, this person went and killed somebody or killed, you know, like the lyrics are enough to make people crazy enough to want to kill. And he said, what was in Hitler's CD case? You know? Like,
yeah.
Was he listening to Def Leppard or something? You know what I mean? Like, what was Hitler listening to that he decided to go kill, you know, millions of people?
Right. That's
you know?
A good point.
That's
a good point in all directions.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
cool.
You know, I don't mean to pick on Def Leppard. It just came to mind, but.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, my gosh. Chris Rock. Yeah. Sometimes he just rocks. Oh,
he
my
does.
Goodness. All right. Before we take a short PSA and announcements break, I just want to do our usual weekly trivia. Now, normally we actually have a contest where I ask a question and the first caller with the first correct answer wins the contest, and you get to be a guest co-host on the show or have a show done on you, that kind of thing. But we're trying to keep the line short so we can get people caught up on that. So I'm actually going to give some useless brain information, some trivia. So this is the Do You Know part of the show. So these are facts about the human body, just three of them. Did you know? I didn't know this. This is kind of cool. That each square inch of human skin consists of about 20 feet of blood vessels. Now I'm looking at my hand, and I'm like, what the hell, really? Really?
Wow.
I even brought out the measuring tape. I'm like, really? All right. Now, we all know that laughing lowers stress, right? That lowers the stress hormones and strengthens our immune system. But this I didn't know. Did you know that 6-year-olds laugh an average of about 300 times a day? Whereas
nice.
Adults only laugh about 15 to 100 times a day. So
I don't even
wow.
know an adult who laughs that many times in a day.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm like, wow, you know, just those numbers, 300 versus 50 or 15, that's a huge difference. It makes us, you know, look like old stogies or something like that.
Well, that's because the kids laugh at the fart jokes and the boogie picking, and we're all like, now, cover it up, you know. The kids
think
it's funny.
I still laugh at the booger picking.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you said
but. When I get caught.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh my
All right,
goodness.
Last one. Then we're going to have to stop laughing for 90 seconds. Darn. Number three, the average human body contains enough iron to make a 3-inch nail, enough sulfur to kill all fleas on an average dog, enough carbon to make 900 pencils, enough potassium
wow.
to fire a toy cannon, enough fat to make 7 bars of soap, enough phosphorus to make 2,200 match heads, and enough water to fill a 10-gallon tank.
Wow.
So those were the I don't know if they would be considered useless information, because I find that kind of useful. But there's our trivia of the week. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, let's go ahead and do this. Let's take a quick 90-second break for a PSA and a couple of announcements. And we'll be right back, and we'll get right into the interview with Guru Mark Wiley. So we'll be right back after this.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual-compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
Hi, this is Eddie Morales from Kickin' It Old School on KCAA 1050 AM. I want to take this opportunity to invite you to the martial arts event of the year, the Masters Hall of Fame, on Saturday, June 22nd, 2013, at the Orange County Hilton, located in Costa Mesa, California. This year's theme is Women in the Martial Arts. Our guest speaker will be Lisa the Black Widow King. We will be honoring many legends in the martial arts. Join Dan and I from Kickin' It Old School at the Masters Hall of Fame, Saturday, June 22nd, 2013. Get your tickets now at mastershalloffame.org.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. It's about 6:45 Pacific time, and if you're just tuning in, you've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Restita and Robert. Our special guest tonight is the girl Mark Wiley, and we were having fun a little bit earlier.
and
we were having so much fun a little bit earlier, and so if you're just now tuning in, you missed out. So listen to the archive afterwards. Well, let's go ahead and start our discussion. It looks like we've got about three people on our chat board as well. I don't know how many people are listening live, but it looks like we have a guru, Mark Stewart, on the line also. Or not on the line. He's on our chat board, and he's actually got a question for you, Mark.
Sure.
Guru Stewart asks, "What is your opinion on the widespread generic use of the term panantukan at any form of Filipino martial arts empty hand? It was taught to me as quote unquote Filipino boxing."
Right.
And that's a good question, because I have seen like the same thing as Guru Stewart was talking about. So what's your take on that?
Well, first I'd like to say to Guru Stewart that I saw all your videos that you did with Unique Publications, and they were great, including the Pongai Noon ones. So thanks for putting them out.
Then Guru Mark, did you see me on the cover of his Streetwise self-defense for his kneeing me in the face?
Was that you?
That was me.
Nice. That's what made the cover so dynamic. You know, I mean, if not for you, the cover would have been nothing. You know,
that's right. Hear that, girl, Mark Stewart? It would have been nothing without me.
That's right. You owe him.
Oh, that one's going to come back and bite me.
I'm waiting for him to start typing.
Nice. That's actually an excellent question, because it actually speaks to a broad range of potential questions around the same thing with the Filipino arts, is that over here in the U.S., because the arts were relatively unknown early on, and the way that they were promoted out is that the generic terms for empty hand stuff like pangamut and panantukan and dumag and et cetera and buno, they were just used to people just assume that they meant boxing or grappling or throwing or whatever. But actually, in the Philippines, there are specific styles that have those names attached to them, and they're not generic. So, like, over here for kicking arts, we say, oh, we do sipa or pananjakmin or sikaran or whatever. But actually, sikaran is a specific kicking style in the Philippines. Yaoyan is another specific kicking style in the Philippines, a kicking-based style in the Philippines. Sipaan would be like just to say to kick or kicking, if you want to use a generic term. But not all kicks would fall under that, and it doesn't, you know. So panantukan as a term, so suntuk is to punch, suntukan is punching, panantukan is like boxing. But as a term, Filipino boxing in the Philippines, using the word panantukan means like Western boxing. it doesn't mean this kind of boxing with a knife in your hand and doing these techniques like what they call guntings or hitting the nerves and the biceps and things like that and arm wrenching and takedowns and who butt drills, all that is all in, that's all kind of an invention here in the U.S. or not to say it's bad, and I don't know, maybe invention's the wrong word, but having all of that stuff jammed under one term, panuntukan, is actually not correct for how it's used in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. However, over here, it's become the norm in the last 30 years that anytime any Filipino martial arts instructor wants to teach anything related to empty hand, they can just call it panuntukan. And actually, that's not correct as it's used in the Philippines. Because there's specific systems, just like, you know, like there are specific stick fighting systems, right? There's specific empty hand systems, and they don't all do the same techniques, right? Mm-hmm. So there are punching systems, and there's trapping system, and grappling, and leg sweeping systems. But they're actually arts on their own. But over here, we just kind of throw everything together. It's an odd thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd always wondered about that throughout the years, you know, is whether or not panuntukan was like the Filipino expression of what we would know as Western boxing, or if it was, you know, a collective generic term for all empty hand type stuff. And then I started getting confused when I started learning Dos Epadas. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And then when we started doing Dos Epadas, and oh my gosh, you know, at least Grandmaster Kakoi called it Pangamot. And I'm like,
Pangamot,
I'm so confused.
Right.
I'm very confused.
Right.
You know,
but you realize first, you have to realize too that there's like 72, you know, ethno-linguistic groups that in the Philippines that all speak different languages, have different cultures. So the terms, you know, Pangamot for empty hands is like saying in Cebu, is like saying mano mano for the Spanish version for empty hands, like the modern Aranese people use as a term, right? Or using, you know, panuntukan as one style of empty hand, which is boxing. It's just a Filipino term for boxing. It's not a secret deadly boxing with elbow strikes, a knife in one hand, and a stick in another hand. And this is all training under the umbrella term of how, quote, Kali is taught here in the U.S. And Kali, again, is another American invention as a term for Filipino martial arts. They never had that in the Philippines until 10 years ago when Americans started going, you know, bringing it over. They never used the term Kali. That was another one of the early myths that over here that this grand art of Kali, the mother art of the Philippines, of which Arnisa and Escriban and Panuntukan and Sikaran and all these things, Buno and Dumag, are all part of this grand MMA of the 1800s, you know, Kali. And it never existed over there as an art. Nobody could tell you what it is. And nowadays, you know, in the last 15 years, if you've been to the Philippines and talked to the old-timers, say, oh, or even the instructors now, and you say, oh, yeah, I do Kali. And they go, oh, American Arnese, got it. Now I know what your style looks like. It's a blend of all kinds of stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because all the guys who the grandmasters now who are using Kali, so today as a term, Kali, they refer to it as bladed art, and Kali is a shortened term for Kalis, which means a cutlass or a sword, right? Like the Kris sword. Kalis and Keters are just a different spelling. But all these guys, so if you want to say that the philosophy of your art and the expression of your art is based on the blade, knife or sword, then you can say Kali, meaning that portion of your training of Eskrima or Arnis. But when you're doing stick fighting, it doesn't. Your stick techniques, it doesn't hold up. When you're doing empty hand techniques, it doesn't hold up to the term.
Right.
But the term itself is okay. Like, you know, Angel Cabala's called his Eskrima Cerrada Eskrima. You know, and Remy Presos calls it Modern Arnis, and Leo Gahi calls his Bikini Tertia Kali. Leo Gahi's uncle calls it Bikini Tertia Cerrada Arnis. So, you know, it just depends if you're teaching. You know, Illustrissimo called his art Kalis Illustris. Kalis with an S, Kalis Illustrissimo, meaning the sword art of Illustrissimo. But when he practiced with a stick, he called it Illustrissimo Eskrima.
Mm-hmm.
So he using the term to differentiate a particular area of training, right?
Mm-hmm.
But over here in the U.S., we, you know, there's a huge movement of everybody calling their art Kali and then having Panuntukan and Dumag and all this kind of stuff in there that are all separate systems.
Right.
In the Philippines, many of which have not come together as they have over here, but a huge amount of the techniques over here do not exist in the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
and haven't existed in the Philippines and weren't brought here by the original teachers in this country, Leo Hieron and Angel Cabalas and Floro Villabre, et cetera. A lot of this stuff was developed in California, but under the term of Kali and under the term of Panantukan, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you could never find it over there. It's so I say it's not really Filipino martial art, Philippine martial arts, meaning of the Philippines, but it's certainly
mm-hmm.
of the concept and principles of the Filipino systems.
Right.
But it's really, I say it's, if I'm being pro, giving a pro about it, I say really it's the invention and the development of the genius of Dan Inosano for his
mm-hmm.
great efforts in putting all this together for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not historically of the Philippines.
Mm.
Yeah.
So would it be almost like, you know, the terms that we use here in the West, would it be more of like I guess an easier way for the Western practitioners, you know, as beginners,
yeah.
To categorize
mm-hmm.
their what they're learning.
Right.
Because, like, according to my dad, like, when he was learning Eskima, his brothers and his great-granddad would just show him stuff. They would really say, oh, well, this is Panantukan. You know,
right, right.
This is Dumog. This, because it was all
right,
together.
Right.
You know, he would just get thrown out in the rice field and just, oh, okay, well, that didn't work.
Right.
I need to do something else. You know, and
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it, when, you know, I said, oh, no, you know, yeah, you know, I went to a Kali seminar. My dad goes, what?
What's
that's
that?
A
right,
goddess.
Right.
You know, right? That's a
right,
goddess.
Right.
What are you talking about? I'm like, oh, gosh. I don't...
Right.
And that confused me even more. And I'm like, I don't...
And all of the grandmasters who have been using the word Kali, right, Floro Villabre, Ben Lagusa, you know, Leo Gahe, the Sayok family, all of these guys come out of an Arnis or Eskrima background.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had Arnis or Eskrima instructors. So there was no Kali art that they learned. They just adopted the term in the 1980s. So if you go back in the early 80s and into the mm-hmm. late 70s and 60s, for example, I have copies of Floro Villabre's certificate from the Philippines when he won the championship match and then before he came to Hawaii. That
mm-hmm.
oral history here in the U.S. tells us that he was nominated then and named as the Grand Master of Kali. But actually, the certificate says Eskrima.
Mm-hmm.
And up until a certain time, he was using Eskrima and labeling his certificates to students as the Villabre Eskrima style. You know, the word Eskrima
mm-hmm.
was on the certificate. And Kiri Tertia was always called Arnis. And even, you know, Tuhan Gahe put out, Leo Gahe put out videos and articles in the 70s and early 80s and ads for camps that said Arnis. And then just all of a sudden, everybody, a certain group of individuals in Hawaii and Los Angeles started using the word Kali.
Mm-hmm.
And then people thought it was something deeper because of the history putting, the legend putting forth about this legendary history of Kali and, you know, and that it's like the MMA of the time, right? It had everything in it, right? But what martial art had at that time? Nothing, you know. So then this whole thing, everybody started just trying to adopt the term to be hip and cool. But it got really confusing for people because you can't really see a difference in the techniques when the Kali, quote, Kali people are doing some kind of drilling method or self-defense techniques with the stick. You don't see any difference with the techniques from the Arnisadors or the Eskrimadors. And I went, when I was in the Philippines, when I first started going, I mean, I was traveling from Luzon down to Mindanao, meeting masters and videotaping them, interviewing them, shooting photos of them for my projects and training with them, and I didn't find a single Kali and practitioner. And nobody could point me the way. And I went into the universities and spoke with the folklorists and the anthropologists and the sociologists, and we're looking for stuff in the archives, and there's only mention of Arnis or Eskrima in any of the folklore, in the songs, in any of that stuff. And you think if it was part of the culture, it would be in there somewhere, and it's just not. It's not until recent history when people started, Westerners started going into the Philippines and asking the teachers to teach them Kali, and they were like, I don't know what that is. And then they'd show them some techniques, and they go, oh, yeah, Arnis, okay, I'll show you. If you want to call it Kali, that's fine, but here, I can do that. We have
mm-hmm.
that technique. You know, and if they started calling, so now there's a whole bunch of teachers who call their art Kali, which cracks me up, in the Philippines, who were our niece for 50 years. But right. Now they say, like, oh, right. I'm the such-and-such Kali Arnis or Kali Eskrima Arnis. And even when the WECOP, the World Eskrima Kali Arnis Federation, first formed, you know, Juni Kanyete was one of the founding, you know, founders mm-hmm. of that. And he was really debating whether he should put the word Kali or not, but he thought he had to or he'd lose the support of all the, quote, Kali members, you mm-hmm. know, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and Europe, you know, who are Western-trained
right.
and not trained in the Philippines. But really, nobody knew what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just all just relates back to the Panuntukan question, is that really Panuntukan is boxing, and that's it. And then mm-hmm. actually there's something like 13 tribal arts of wrestling, and they all have different names. Dumag is one method of wrestling from one tribe, and Buno is another one. And
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole bunch. There's actually a book that came out in the 70s or maybe it's the early 80s by an anthropologist on this, on these grappling systems, and they're all different. So if you were in Japan or in China and you're doing Tai Chi, and then if you threw somebody in push hands, and you would say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's Swajiao. It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay. And then if you punch them with your Tai Chi, then like you say, like, oh, well, that's Wing Chun. It's
right.
Like, you can't just grab these terms
right.
generically
right.
because you
yeah.
think it relates to something. I mean, they're
that's
all different.
A good way of putting
Wing
it.
Chun,
yeah.
Yeah, Wing Chun is one. If you do in Japan, there's less art than China, right? It's a small place. And you can't say, like, I did karate, I hit somebody, and then I did a sweep, so that's the judo.
Yeah.
It's just there's a sweep in your karate. There happens to be a sweeping takedown. It's not that you're also doing judo. But now, and then if you, like, you know, wrist lock them to do a defense against the knife or something and say, well, that's the jiu-jitsu. Now I do jiu-jitsu, judo, and karate, but really you're just doing one karate system that happens to have a sweep and a joint lock,
mm-hmm.
right? But then the advertising goes out to be, I teach karate, jiu-jitsu, judo, you know, samurai,
yeah.
and you just start listing them out and then putting logos on your shirts for all those things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit like fantasy, because you don't really have any ranks in all those styles. You haven't really gone through the curriculum in those styles, even if there's no rank per se. You,
mm-hmm.
you haven't really gone through the curriculum in those styles, but you're claiming to teach them all. And it just
right.
blows my mind, because I see these, I come across all the time these people, friends. I mean, they're friends, associates, they're all, everything's good. The fighting techniques are great, and we're not even saying that, you know, it has nothing to do with how tough you are, how good your art is. Your art is good. It's just that the terms... And we were brought up to believe, the terms in this country that we're using for everything are just not in line with what's being used in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little, I was watching a video on YouTube the other week of this guy in Britain, was trained by American instructors, and he was teaching the limb destruction techniques of Kali, and he's doing Muay Thai kicks. I said, well, when did Muay Thai kicks, I mean, the techniques were straight out of Muay Thai. And I said, when did those kicks become part of Filipino martial arts?
Mm-hmm.
And not saying that you can't blend them together, but then aren't you doing Jiu-Jitsu, which is another expression, or MMA, another great
mm-hmm.
expression of a fighting art, but it's not FMA, right? It's not Filipino
yeah.
martial arts.
Right.
So
right.
why do we have to throw everything under one term? Why can't we say, this is Filipino martial arts, period. That's Muay Thai, that's JKD, or that's Wing Chun, or that's whatever. That's Western boxing, and we teach Filipino stick fighting, and we teach boxing, and we
mm-hmm.
teach JKD. And instead of saying all of it has to be Filipino, you know, because it's not
exactly.
really. It's not really,
That's a wonderful explanation, because I've been, for the last 2 years, I've been sort of wondering how do I explain the
mm-hmm.
the differences in what I teach at my own studio, because
right.
Just in the last few years we've really heavily brought in the doce pares, because
right.
we were keeping the classes separate, so we said, okay, let's involve the doce pares in the Kajikembo curriculum, because well, it is part
right.
of the Kajikembo curriculum, but we kept it separate. But some people are saying, yeah, I'm doing a Eskrima, when they're doing like Kempo, you know,
right.
technique or something, and I'm like, well,
right.
it's got the concept in it, but you know, it's not what you're doing right now is not necessarily Eskrima, or the other way around,
right.
you know. So
right,
we're
right.
doing like,
right.
if we
right.
throw in a Kajikembo technique inside of a,
mm-hmm.
you know, stick technique or whatever. Oh, I'm doing Kajikembo. I can't, you know, to this day, I couldn't figure out how to explain it to them. And you gave
right.
me a great idea on how to explain it to them. Thank you.
Well, that was really interesting, Sifu, because you and I, a year ago in January, we're doing Tai Chi pushing hands, and then we started throwing in some gunting. Does that change the art, or does the dynamics?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
No, please, you. You're the Tai Chi expert. I'd like to hear what you have.
Well, you know, I thought it was funny because, you know, for me and also for you, Steve Bob, it didn't change the art, you know, in a sense. It didn't change, like, the country that it came from or the category, because it's what we do, right? You know?
Right,
I do push hands, you do Wing Chun, you did a little bit of what I did, and then whoop, and then I'm doing a little bit of what you do, and it, you know, and it relates, and it makes sense, right? So, you know, at the time, we were playing, but, you know, I thought, well, if we had to put, you know, like a name to what we did, what we were doing before was a Tai Chi drill, and now we're doing a Wing Chun drill, and now we're into Kali, and now we're dead,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. But with me and Sipu Bob, it didn't change our personal art, so to speak. And what I'm having a hard trouble with in with my own students is explaining that,
right?
Because, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm like anti-Western or anything, because I'm not, but, you know, it almost seems that sometimes the Western mind really wants that sense of organization, of, you know, of the categories and the labels, and, you know, this is what I'm doing, and this is, you know, blah, 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 which is good if it helps you really understand your art, then I'm all for it. But like you mentioned earlier, if people are lumping everything into one name when it's really not what that one name is, then then it farther down the line as the generations go, you know, would it be confusing to those future generations?
That's great. And, you know, see, for this is a great segue. We have another question that got posted on our
We lost him, but I read the question.
Robert, you there?
Already. Well, while
Robert,
he's logging, well,
I think I lost you too. Oh no, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll call.
Yeah,
he'll call back. I mean,
yeah,
he's still apparently he's still on here.
Am I still there?
Yeah, you're here.
Oh, there I am. My headset went down. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay.
I've got this question. Oh, there. Now the headset just powered back up. Okay, now it's my turn for technical difficulties.
I don't feel so bad.
Where's the Twilight Zone music? Wait a minute.
I know. I got this question from Laurie O'Connell Olson, and she said, question for Guru Mark Wiley. Are instructors/students of FMA encouraged to cross-train? It seems like many Filipino martial artists like yourself and my own instructor, I train with monthly, Mark Makita. Now, I trained with Mark 25 years ago. Not only cross-train in other styles, but even seem to actually blend them into their teaching. Is it something about the mentality towards training in the FMA? That's where she goes in to apologize about not calling in. So what do you think about cross-training and blending and doing everything that Lori's asking about?
I got a couple of answers for it, but I first like to, and this will lead into it, respond to what Sifu Restita was just saying about your two guys playing together and her answering to her students about it's not changing her art or whatever. And there's what that shows is that the continuity of your own art can adapt to the drills as it progresses out. So the push hands, the Pui Sho joins the Chi Sao, right? Joins the Kali Gunting Hubud, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But your art can still hold up. So it's not changing your art,
right?
It's just that you're expressing it in a little different way because you're being pressured with different energy, right? Or different techniques.
Exactly.
So that's great. The art can grow and expand and adapt. It's really a great thing. But I think if you change the training method in the class, to include all of that holo-holo, right? All that mix and match.
Yeah, holo-holo.
Right?
Right.
Then you lose the continuity of what is Tai Chi. So you're able to hold your own because you have a continuity of the art from the form to the single push hand to the double push hand, right? And learning how to root and ward off, roll back, press, and push, and all of these things. But if you start throwing in the guntings and the locks and the trapping and the this and that, you're going to lose that continuity. And then where do you hang those techniques on? There's no through line, right? There's branches without a root, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem that I see with a lot of FMA practitioners today, who came up under a learning umbrella of seminars, and who opened schools and clubs to open branches in places where there were no schools, but they were taught in seminars without that continuity. So they're just grabbing stuff and throwing it all under terms. So I think to go to the question that was just asked was that, I think by default they cross-trained because they didn't have enough information within the parameters of the system curriculum that they were learning in to fill in the gaps of teaching people at different levels and to have answers for it. And no art needs to have every answer, right?
Right.
Myself, I cross-trained. I don't do all of those art that you mentioned earlier now because I lost interest in a lot of them. They didn't suit my as my intellectual understanding of the art and my physical feelings of the arts progressed, some of them didn't resonate as well with me as others. And it's just, it's just your personal choice. Which ones do you stick with, you know?
Right.
But my training in, for example, Golchokun, Five Ancestor Fist, is completely separate from my training in Filipino martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not blend those together because they really don't lend themselves to being blended. You can't just grab a technique from that art and just throw it into the framework of that art.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, you have to change the framework, right? Because Tai Chi moves and Muay Thai moves don't work in the midst of doing Wing Chun because your body's in a Wing Chun dynamic and body mechanic and thinking of the center line and blah, blah, blah. And you can't just stop that motion really quick if you're straight doing Wing Chun and do it like Muay Thai or something. So that's why Bruce Lee developed JKD, had a different through line. The whole training is based on a whole different concept than just Wing Chun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, however, the mechanics or the strength training in Five Ancestor Fist or the Jing, right, and the Fa Jing, and the root power and the idea of sink, float, and swallow and split, these four concepts of applying the empty hand, were so pervasive now in my body mechanic that I cannot divorce that skill set from my eskrima.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my strikes are stronger, my root is stronger, my base is stronger, my projection of force is better than it is when I was just doing eskrima by itself. But I'm not mixing that Chinese techniques with the Filipino techniques. It's just that my expression of martial arts has improved in terms of a body mechanic. I'm not changing my stances in eskrima or my angle one strike to look like a such and such technique from kung fu, whatever. But I can't take that body English out of me. You know what I'm saying? Right. So the Filipinos. Okay. So answering the question, not including myself, the Filipino arts really developed as we see them today after World War II, when Shotokan and judo and jiu-jitsu and taekwondo came in the 50s and 60s into the Philippines. And then we started seeing, metropolitan Filipino martial arts, those in the Spanish cities, Intramuros, et cetera, Manila, that were the Spanish ruled for 333 years before the Spanish-American War and then World War II, that there was stick fighting, single stick, double stick, and stick and dagger. Swords and sharp things were supposedly outlawed through martial law in those walled cities, although the sword and dagger was also used outside of those cities in more of the in the country areas, the provinces, as they call it. So those arts, then after World War II, when judo came in and Shotokan, I mean, Remy Presas was one of the original members of the JKA, Japan Karate Association, and he developed the Heian Katas. And his, when he developed Modern Arnis after studying Balintawak, he created these empty hand kata that looked like the Heian Kata, but done Filipino-ishy, you know. He developed stick katas, which didn't exist in the Philippines, again based off of the Heian Kata, the H&I patterns, H-pattern-I pattern katas. And it became now as the modern Filipino martial art. And Porfirio Lanada and Benjamin Luna Lima lining people up wearing red gi pants and wearing karate belts and lining people up and calling out commands and having them count out techniques. Those ideas of line drilling came after World War II because the Filipinos learned how to teach masses of people by watching and taking the classes. Like if you read the biographies of these masters in my book, Filipino Martial Culture, which came out in 98, but there's, I think, 25 or so different stories of grandmasters and how they developed their styles. Mm-hmm. All of them had training in karate or judo or jiu-jitsu or aikido. I mean, Kakoi Kanyete, Escrito, right? Mm-hmm. It's Escriba and Aikido together. So you have this Escrima style with lots of joint locks and throws in it.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, now over here, everybody thinks, oh, that's the empty hand locking art of Kali or whatever. And
exactly.
It was a Japanese art that he mixed with his Filipino stick fighting, and he called it a new thing, Escrito, right? And then there was Kamjuka, combat judo karate Escrima, Kamjuka Escrima. And then there was a whole bunch of them like that where they just took these, they love the acronyms. I mean, what's his name? Carlito Lanada, not Porfirio Lanada is the grandmaster of Arnis Lanada, but Carlito Lanada is the founder of Kuntao Lima Lima, or Five and Five, Kuntao. But it has nothing to do with Southern Chinese Fistway, K-U-N-T-A-O.
Mm-hmm.
It's K-U-N-T-A-W, which is an acronym for Kun Sagrado Hatao, Sacred Strike. And his art of empty hand fighting, which he taught on a military basis, specifically Subic base in the Philippines, to a lot of American servicemen who are now teaching, you know, all over, and he's retired to Virginia. But it comes from three Japanese styles that begin with the letter S, Shotokan, Shitoryu, and Shorinji Kenpo. So where's the Filipino in that? It just happened to be a Filipino guy, and he threw a Filipino word on it. But his art is not Filipino. But everybody thinks now there's this Kuntao art in the Philippines. But you know what? It's really Japanese, you know. And he happened to learn, he did some Arnis, so then when he does his empty hand and calls it Kuntao, people think it's there's this Kuntao thing in there, and it's really not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, in answering the question, I know all this history, but, you know,
it's
sometimes
great.
It's necessary to give the foundation for the answer, which is the Philippine arts as we saw them come out in the 60s and 70s and 80s, before they became really MMA, is that they were developed from teachers cross-training. Arnisadors in the Philippines learned karate and judo and jiu-jitsu and aikido and taekwondo, and all of a sudden there were born a whole bunch of arts with empty hand components that, for my money, I think are better than the original versions because they're based on... So like in jiu-jitsu, we have empty hand against empty hand. The guy attacks and you do your locks, throws, and if he has a knife, you know, he's holding it at your throat or holding your collar, and he's going to stab you, you know, back in the 60s. And then you do your lock and, you know, takedown or whatever. But for the Filipinos, they're actually using their empty hands against a skilled weapon practitioner who's doing Escrima techniques, and they develop the locks and all that they learned in judo, jiu-jitsu, aikido, and train them inside of their Filipino martial art to learn how to defend against the Filipino martial arts strikes, rather than just a guy doing like a downward slash or hack or something, or a front thrust or something. I mean, it's really, the Filipinos of that era, the past masters, really developed out intricate systems of using and training the Japanese methods based on the context of their Filipino methods. They didn't just blend and say, I grabbed some locks from this art and let me throw it in. They actually developed training methods for it that fit within the parameters of their Filipino art. And the stuff that didn't fit, you know. And then the art for the next 30 years developed out that way. But the teachers then were not really encouraging their students to cross-train. They just wanted them to learn their method, of course, you know, just like any traditional teacher, right? But nowadays, everybody in the United States, everybody's cross training. I mean, we have YouTube my goodness, you know, we had DVDs, right? We have seminars every weekend everywhere. So it's hard not to cross train. But the problem is without the through line, without the curriculum, without the basic foundation of how to develop the core skills of your art.
Mm-hmm.
How can you assimilate that material in a usable fashion and then be able to pass it down to students so that they have that continuity within that art? It's very difficult unless you really have, a curriculum that has a progressive development and not just more techniques, more techniques, more techniques,
mm-hmm.
more techniques, more techniques. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where where it gets difficult is that, you know, there are some people that define progression as, quote unquote, more techniques, more techniques,
right.
more
it's
techniques,
not.
As
yeah.
opposed
well,
to really crystallizing your skill
right.
and being
right.
able to assimilate it in other training methods. And that's kind of what our original question asker, Laurie O'Connell,
right.
was wondering about. And Sensei O'Connell just wants to tell you that she really enjoyed your answer to her question.
Oh, thanks.
And that it really clarifies.
Sorry, I rambled.
The history is always great. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I think we've only had really great history things, like maybe, what, twice, Bob?
Mm.
You know, on anything?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think only twice. And it's really informative to get, you know, that history and why, you know, things are the way they are. Sensei Lori says that it really clarifies what she's been training in
yeah.
her
okay.
FMA, because it the Filipino empty hand seems to go well with her jujitsu,
right?
Because it makes sense to her, right?
Because probably her jujitsu was the foundation of the Filipino empty hand she learned.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly, and so it makes sense to her.
Mm-hmm.
Sensei Lori says, you're not rambling. You're just adding more useful info to the answer.
Nice. Well, you know, there has to be a context for everything, right?
Right.
So you need to have a context for your training and a context for developing a technique. And if you, like, you know, in Tai Chi or Wing Chun, okay, where you have this kind of, this Chi Sao or this Tui Shou, right, this arm mm-hmm. sensing, listening, sensitivity stuff, if you break your body structure,
mm-hmm.
or you cross your center line in the wrong way, your arms then can collapse on you,
mm-hmm.
right? And your technique falls apart, right? So
mm-hmm.
so your body structure is your continuity. And your stance is holding that posture, right? So the
mm-hmm.
stance is the bottom half, the posture is everything. But if you then switch into a C-lat stance, it can no longer hold the continuity of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And your push hands, your arms will probably collapse, you know, because
right.
you lose that through line. There's a time for that, you know, C-lat stance, a senpak or depak, where they cross the legs, but it's mm-hmm. not in the middle of push hands, maybe, right?
Right.
So it doesn't mean it's not useful, just in that context, it breaks the continuity of your defense or of your reaction, of your action,
mm-hmm.
you know, so... But you only learn that through a proper lesson plan over the course of decades, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just in an art that's mixed and matched and full of techniques, techniques should just be the expression of the concepts or the principle or the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like today at the FMA exchange, I taught double sticks, but I taught the Kabarawan style of merging.
Mm-hmm.
And Kabarawan is a Northern Luzon style of double stick training and single stick also, but longer sticks. And it's different than the Sinawali, which is the basic double sticks that most people know about.
Uh-huh.
And their method in Sinawali is you crash your sticks together in the middle, and you crash them, and you crash them high, low, high, medium, low, and low and high and low, and all
uh-huh.
these different combinations. But the sticks hit with force in the middle. But we never really do techniques like that, so why are we training it like that? And the Kabarawan style merges from the outside, so there's actually no banging of sticks or clashing of sticks at all, and the force, you keep going with the force, but it screws up the Sinawali horribly, because the person trying to do Sinawali is left with open gaps everywhere because
mm-hmm.
of your merging techniques, and you're flowing what I call leaking into the gap, right? So there's a place for all of it, but you have, you know, the context has to be in place. So the strategy of merging works against somebody who has a strategy of crashing in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't apply that wall for them to crash into, your weapon to smash into their weapon, then their technique, they don't really have a response. It's a very difficult
mm-hmm.
response for them. But you have to know the context in which to use it, and that can only be done by learning properly under an instructor. You know?
Right.
I was teaching, I was a guest instructor at a Modern Renaissance seminar, and I used to train in modern innings for a long time, and but I don't do it anymore. But I was a guest instructor, and I did the last hour. But in the seminar, it was supposed to be a modern Ernie seminar, and then the instructor stopped and taught Belin to walk for a while because he also trained with Grandmaster Attilio. And then he stopped, and he started showing Okinawan tempo because he was a student of Seika Oyata, Taika Oyata, excuse me. And I kept thinking to myself, why is he doing all this in a modern Ernie seminar? It's this thing that people think you just blend arts in the Philippine arts, and you, whatever name you attach to it is fine, but... All of my, I have a lot of friends in modern Anise who are very well known in the art, and they're doing modern Anise, and then they're doing Belin to walk, and then they're doing some techniques they learned from videos or DVDs or from friends, and some of them incorporate a lot of stuff that I've shown them and taught them, but they're still calling it modern Anise, and I'm thinking, well, modern Anise really, historically, was a system of teaching high school and elementary school students a PE curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taught in 12 lessons. That's a 12-week program in PE. And everyone's lined out on the football field and swinging six together, doing Sinawali and basic blocks and defenses, and there are 12 lessons, 12 weeks of lessons. And it was developed for that, and it was developed as something different than the fighting art that it came from, Belin to walk, and as a method of teaching the youth and simplifying the art as a PE curriculum. And then Remy Presas brought it to the U.S. When he brought it to the U.S., he said, modern Anise is the art within your art. And he became hugely successful, more than anyone else except maybe Dan Inosanto, at spreading this art and teaching a gazillion seminars and having a gazillion army of students, you know. I mean, huge. But it was all within the Kempo Karate and Shotokan and Aikido groups, because he would teach it as an art that can be assimilated into your art. So this gets back to that, to our guest, listener's question about the cross-training, because it was taught as a cross-training art from the 70s, right, through the efforts of Remy Presas, that you don't have to stop what you're doing or learn a whole new art. Just put it into your art. It's the art within your art. So that was great for pushing out the art, but the downside is that everyone doing Kempo at Parker Kempo doing modern Anise is doing it with Ed Parker Kempo flair and Ed Parker Kempo stances and Ed Parker Kempo ranges. And the guys who are doing Shotokan are doing it in longer, straighter front stances with cleaner lines. And, you know, the whole body mechanic is different.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it is what looks like what Remy Presas was teaching, because he was using his Filipino base and a slight and a Shotokan base in on his. But when he was applying the stick stuff, he was in the stances of Arnise and the body mechanic of Arnise, not of Shotokan, not of Kempo, not of Aikido. But now, 30 years later, nobody knows that there's something different. You know, and they think that you don't have to, that Filipino arts is just an adjunct, an add-on system. And then when you do a Filipino arts, if you don't do another art, you're lacking. So they all cross-train and do different things. But it stands on its own. But it just takes some restudying at this point from a lot of people, because they don't really know what it is. You know, I taught at a big modern Anise camp last summer, and I'm doing again this July in at Villanova University in Pennsylvania. A lot of the top modern Anise teachers in the country will be teaching there, and each one of them, including myself, is doing stuff that's not modern Anise, you know. And, you know, I have an excuse because I don't really claim to teach it anymore. But those guys, my contemporaries, are all teaching modern Arnis, but they're grabbing techniques from here and drills from there, and they're developing out their own curriculums, which is great because they're really progressing in the art. However, it's no longer modern Arnis.
Right.
So at what point is Shotokan no longer Okinawan karate? At what point is, you know, is Wushu no longer Kung Fu, right? At what point is there's a jump-off point somewhere, and I think people should just change the names of what they're doing then.
Right, exactly. I did like your mention about that there has to be, you know, that good base or that good understanding of your art in order to, number one, find your through line. I like that.
Right.
that term. Define your through line so that way you can use it in cross training, and it seems to just be the most difficult thing nowadays because of, and nothing against MMA, but there's you know, with the advent of MMA, you know, especially the younger crowd, you know, they want this and that, or you know, the halo halo, right? They want this and that, or the chop suey, and it's the end all be all, and it's MMA, but they don't know. It's common that you know some of the younger crowd will not know exactly where these techniques come from.
Came from.
Because the lines blur. Because they don't have it. Because they don't have that thing. They don't have that sense of through line. And even then, even if they do have an understanding of what something is, it's basic enough to where, you know, they think that all jiu-jitsu is Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know?
Right.
Or all karate is, you know, I had some kid come up to me and go, you know, and he was so sure that karate was Chinese. And I'm like, well, if you really want to get technical about it, you know what
because
I mean?
How thin do we slice the lines, you know?
Exactly. And, and I find that important. And, that, you know, that's something, you know, I, too, am trying to get across to my students. It's the hard part is explaining it.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm sorry, Bob, did you have a question?
No, go ahead. Okay. It's a great conversation.
So I used to study, I was trained in art with one of the late grandmasters of Arnis named Benjamin Luna Lima. His style was called Lightning Scientific Arnis. Incredible Arnis Udvar. He was left-handed. His left forearm looked like Popeye. And his right one looked like Sweet Pea, you know. He was just really a great martial artist. And I had a classmate, John Escudero, under Grandmaster Lima. And then John and I haven't seen each other since the year 2000. He moved to Tel Aviv. He married an Israeli woman. He moved to Tel Aviv from the Philippines. Grandmaster Lima passed away, so we never, our paths didn't cross again. Well, he was here last week. He came to the U.S. to teach some seminars in Seattle and Los Angeles and Virginia, D.C. area. And he was taking the train up to New York City. And I said, jump off in Philadelphia, where I live. It's right on the train line, and hang out for a couple hours. So he came and we hung out. And we saw each other. I got him a cheesesteak and took him to the Rocky statue, you know. And but we did a little bit of training. And he was saying to me how the students were asking him for all this kind of modern FMA stuff. And he does the classic style, right. And he was saying, well, you can't just jump into the tactical. He called it tactical, the tactical stuff, until you learn the classic art. And I'm thinking the classic art is not even that classic. I mean, it's just until the late 1990s that people started changing it up and mixing and matching it in the Philippines. And there's a whole bunch of guys now calling their Arnis, you know, this and that tactical system and this tactical system. And they have all this stuff where they're wearing SWAT gear and carrying guns and doing defense against machine guns with their bolos. Like, really? And there's pictures of these guys in fatigues with machine guns, you know, automatic rifles and in one hand and, like, machetes in the other hand. And they're wearing, you know, fatigues and stuff. And you're like,
what's going on?
First of all, Who has a gun and is fighting with bolos, okay?
Right.
Because the military that we have over here is just bombing the crap out of people or sending, like, SWAT teams, special ops. You know, they're not fighting on the battlefield with daggers against rifles. I mean, it's not World War II, you know, where they were using bayonets and stuff still. So the whole idea of that is kind of weird. And all of a sudden, they're all teaching the tomahawks and things. Like, where did that come into the Philippines? When did they have tomahawks, you know? And they're teaching karambit. And it's like, well, that's Malaysian and Indonesian. When did the Filipinos get the karambits? Everybody studied Silat here in the U.S., and it was all called the same thing, and they all want to mix it and match because it's Kali, and Kali comes from Silat, but really Kali didn't exist, so it's a whole false connection there. There's Silat in the Philippines, but it's Malay Silat or it's Indonesian Silat. There's no traditional Filipino Silat.
And there's been a lot of confusion with that too, even among my students, because I personally like karambit, right? You know, and they see me playing
cool
with
weapon.
It or whatever. They see me playing with it, and it's cool. And you know, my my exposure to Silat is very limited.
Right.
But unbeknownst to me, like, you know, if I don't talk to them about it, you know, and this goes like with any other teacher, I'm sure, if you don't talk to them about it, they'll put two and two together on their
own.
Right. Yeah, they'll assume.
Yeah.
And they assume that the karambit is inherently Filipino. Yeah,
right,
or it's
right.
Dos Pares, right, exactly, and that no other,
right.
You know, Filipino system has a karambit, and I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, and I only found out that,
right.
You know, that many of them thought that the karambit was, you know, inherently Filipino
yeah.
by one of my senior students. I'm like, oh, gosh, now I got to clear that up. What else?
Right,
write
right,
down
right, right.
Thing.
I know.
What do we got to clear up now?
So there was
all
this
right.
whole thing.
Yeah.
In the mid-80s, where they were taught, they actually formed an association here in the U.S. called the Majapahit Empire as an association, because there was a Majapahit Empire
mm-hmm.
In Southeast
so there's
Asia.
There's actually a Majapahit Empire here?
As an organization.
As
an organization of Silat
oh,
people
okay.
and Kali people, right? They called them
okay.
Majapahit Martial Arts Association or something. But the point is that historically, the Majapahit Empire never reached the Philippines. The Philippines was never part of the named Majapahit Empire. It was like Angkor and, you know, Burma, Philippines, Thailand, whatever. Not Philippines, I'm sorry, Malaysia, Indonesia. But it did not reach the Philippines. And none of the artifacts in the Philippines show that it was there. None of the historical records
mm-hmm.
indicate that the Majapahit Empire had anything to do with it. So the thinking of the group who was promoting this out in the 80s was that the Majapahit martial arts are all one family of martial arts. So Kali and Silat and Panantukan and Muay Thai, you know, all this kind
uh-huh.
of stuff. And it's like, it didn't reach the Philippines. The Philippines was not populated by waves of Malays. They were native Filipinos all in the Filipino islands before Malays came and settled in the Philippines. And just like there's Chinatowns in the United States, it doesn't mean the United States is Chinese.
Right.
Or that,
that's a good way
right.
to put it.
I mean, you know, it's Chinese food is now considered part of the American diet, but
mm-hmm.
Chinese food is not American in origin, even though now
right.
the flavors are American, sweet and sour chicken, general chow, you know. But you know, we've changed the Chinese food a bit for our liking, but it's not native to America. And Silat is not native to the so-called Filipino people.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the Philippines taught by Malays and taught by Indonesians, and now taught by Filipinos who studied under Malays and Indonesians,
mm-hmm.
but there is no traditional Filipino Silat, and there's no Kali that comes from that either. And the Arnis was there in the Philippines before the Silat came, and it stands alongside it today. But there's not any kind of trajectory of a line that says one came from the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not existent. That's just a false history, again, folklore from the United States.
Yeah, wow.
It's maddening to me because I wrote about this in 1997 in my
mm-hmm.
book, Filipino Martial Culture, and I got hung up to dry for 10 years or 15 years before scholars in the Philippines and masters in the Philippines started saying, yeah, it doesn't make sense. And they wrote their own books and their own articles and came out on interviews and documentaries saying, yes, this doesn't exist here, and yes, this is not true, and blah, blah, blah. But for a long time, people thought I was trying to rewrite Filipino history
mm-hmm.
to politically position myself to having some original something. And the books weren't about me at all. It was about really my frustration of trying to find where is this ghost art that I can't find over there.
Right.
Where is
and,
this Kali and how is it
yeah.
different? Where is this Pananchukan and Pananjakman and Sikaron and Dumag and Kinamutai and all of these things that you, Hubad. You know, that doesn't exist in the Philippines. That was developed
yeah.
in San Francisco by the Lucay-Lucay family. But it's become such an inherent part of, quote, Kali that everybody thinks it's from the Philippines.
Uh-huh.
But that group, just Lucky Lucay-Lucay, I think, is the person who developed it. And it was in answer to have a Filipino style of chisao.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
even know it's not rolling exactly. hands, it's like check and parry and move. You know, to
mm-hmm.
have a platform like push hands or chisao where you could build a whole kind of technique progressions out of it. And
mm-hmm.
then they developed, Larry Hartzell put together this lock flow because he was a judo guy. And he put into this hubad this lock flow, and they called it the Kali lock flow because
mm-hmm.
Kali was the name of the system that they chose to teach under that name, right? So now everybody now thinks that hubad and lock flows are historic to the Philippines, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, you know, a lot of information has come out now about it, but I was all standing by myself out there for a while.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, I remember seeing some, long time ago, stuff in forums about, you know, oh, Mark Wiley's information is wrong. And I'm like, oh, come on, you know.
Right.
And, but for the most part, you know, a lot of the people that were talking about it in the forums were Americans. And in
more
my head,
Americans
I'm thinking,
and trained
yeah,
here in the U.S.
Trained here
in
the
U.S. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, come on, you know, unless you've trained in the Philippines, shut the hell
right.
up. You know what I mean?
yeah. Well, that's just it. And then a lot of guys have been going to the Philippines to train under their teacher,
mm-hmm.
who's going to give them the same party line, you know.
Right.
So you got to go over and talk to different people. And, you know, I brought back 172 books from the Philippines on one trip alone. Just one visit.
Mm.
I was going up and down. I collected books from the archives. I Xeroxed from the archives in the universities, books from used bookstores, antiquarian bookstores. I got the different typewritten and handwritten manuals from different Arnis masters, and I copied them while I was there and brought all this information back. And one reviewer actually back, you know, 15 years ago was online in one of the forums and actually said, well, I see there's 172 references in Mark Wiley's book, but I guess he picked the wrong ones because he's full of shit. And I was like, really?
Mm.
You just heard from your teacher, one person,
right.
and I've got 172 references that were written, a lot of them, before your teacher was born. And you're telling me that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, one guy, there was a book review of that book in the Manila Times, and they called me and said, Mark Wiley is a carpetbagger. You know, like the Europeans, when they would conquer other countries, you know, they would go in with their big bags made out of carpet material and put, you know, antiques and artifacts in and take them out of the country. I said, what did I do? Take your old masters out of the country and sell them to museum? Come on. That's pretty funny.
It is. You know, because, you know, until your book came along, I was completely lost, you know, in the martial art of my own culture. And I still have it. It's like all dog-eared and has like coffee all over it and stuff like that. And, you know, until your book came along, I was like, wow, now this makes sense. And for our listeners out there that don't have the book and you are interested in Filipino martial arts, do get it. Filipino martial culture. I will endorse it until the day I die.
Thank you.
Because it's the real deal. And, you know, it's been however long, 10-something years since, you know, since you were standing. Yeah, since you were standing out there all alone. But now, you know, now that you've got, in a sense, some, you know, there is justification out there, you know, that the historians finally went, oh, shoot, he's right. You know what
I
mean?
Right.
But based on that, I do find it funny that even like some of the teachers, and I would, you know, I would assume that they were not in their 70s or 80s when they assumed you were full of shit. You know what I mean?
They were young.
Yeah, like 20s, 30s or whatever. You know, I find it funny that even, you know, teachers in the Philippines would be in their just in their own little neck of the world inside the country. You know, I think it's pretty funny. Gosh.
Yeah.
All right. So for our listeners out there, our number here is 347-677-0699. We are talking with Guru Mark Wiley, and we're having a great conversation, a lot of great information. If you have any questions, give us a call. There's been someone that's been listening intently on a phone line from area code 909. So thanks for listening, area code 909. If you have any questions, just press 1. Otherwise, I'm just going to think that people are listening to the show. So, and one of our regular listeners, Deborah Evans, says, where do I get the book? Deborah, in about
Amazon.com,
in about 20 minutes, I will post the link on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page. So, Deb, if you're not a member of the Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page yet, do get on there. And for anyone else that wants to get on the page, you'll get to know upwards of maybe 4 days to a week ahead of time who our next guest is going to be for the following week. So, you know, get on there. Wow, very cool. Awesome. Very cool stuff. Anyone else have any questions out there? Come on, call in. You know you want to. Or, or type in. If you have any questions about Filipino martial arts or the history.
Psychically, send the questions over. It's all good.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, somebody's typing. So, let's see what they have to say.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so it was just Deb Evans again that said, okay, I'm a member.
Okay, I'm a member. Nice. So it's okay. If you look in my new book, Mastering Eskrima Disarms, right,
mm-hmm.
the last 104 pages are different masters doing disarming techniques of their art.
Mm-hmm.
You can clearly see, without me saying, you know, without saying what arts are good or what arts are bad, because that's just a relative, you know, that's just subjective, you know.
Right.
What are good or what are bad. But we can say what is classically Filipino versus what is mixed and merged with other
mm-hmm.
arts. And if you look in those pictures, it is clear as day which teachers are doing Arnis
mm-hmm.
or Eskrima and which teachers are doing some kind of Americanized MMA halo-halo Filipino-based stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the key positions for even the basic blocks are not correct. The
mm-hmm.
idea of the ranges are not measured correctly. So, you know, in the Filipino arts, they always talk about three ranges, long range, medium,
mm-hmm.
and close. They call it largo, media, or corto, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of other names for that, de campo and de salon and different terms. But there's actually a measuring method for how to measure that range.
Mm-hmm.
And because the techniques in the Philippines are taught based on range, right? It's not just
mm-hmm.
taught about, oh, you have to go from kicking range into trapping range into grappling range, like using a JKD explanation, or
mm-hmm.
right? They're actually like, these are medium range techniques. These are largo mano techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be doing largo mano techniques in medium range
right.
successfully. Strategically, it's just a bad move. But over here, nobody talks about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the Mastering Eskrima Disarms, I show in the beginning how to measure out the ranges.
Yeah, that was a great
addition.
Opponent.
Yeah. And then try the techniques, and you'll see how in some of the pictures in the back, some of the people are doing medium-range techniques in close range,
yeah.
which means their head is too close to the guy's knife. They're
mm-hmm.
bending at the hips and moving their head in striking range of the guy's second hand while their two hands are tied up trying to disarm the other arm.
Mm-hmm.
That they're in long range trying to do a medium-range lock, and they can't reach, so they're putting themselves off balance to get that lock where the guy, if he knew that or was really fighting, could just pull them off balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a function of not learning the art properly and just trying to mix and match everything in it and come up with 1,000 new cool-ass techniques, but without actually having that through line or the continuity of that the technique has to fit within the range and within a gate or position within the inside or outside of the arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it all the time when I'm sparring with people, FMA practitioners today, when I go to Europe, when I go to Asia, when I'm around the U.S., 15 years, 20 years, 30 years training, and they're easily hit because they're in the wrong ranges, allowing me to hit them,
mm-hmm.
doing their quote, zoning. And the
yeah.
footwork is matched. The footwork should be matched to technique, and the footwork should be matched to range. And again, just like you don't want to do a block, like an inside block in close range, because your neck is too close to his left hand, you don't want to be doing a certain footwork technique in the wrong range because it puts you in a disadvantageous position if your opponent's really trying to hit you. But
mm-hmm.
the arts are not taught like that here in the U.S. anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So people have lost the foundation upon which the Filipino martial arts, as Filipino martial arts, are most effective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to have a guy just be like, Bruce Lee said, dissecting the corpse, right? Just having your uke or your partner strike at you. And
mm-hmm.
then you just do 30 techniques on him while he's standing there unmoved.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to stand there unmoved?
Exactly.
And allow
exactly.
you to do the hit, the strike, the punch, the lock, the disarm, the gunting, the other hit, the bite, the throw, the takedown, the twist. No, nobody's going to let you do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're going to be hitting you a second and third and fourth time and fighting and stepping forward and moving sideways and resisting against you.
Mm-hmm.
And if your technique is done from the beginning in the wrong range, the whole other 10 moves that come after are not going to be relevant because your initial move doesn't hold up.
Right.
And you don't know it doesn't hold up because
yeah.
you haven't been pressed on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you find that that the people that still need to learn about their ranges, do you find that those types of practitioners are mainly like seminar people?
Yes, and that's how I think 90% of the practitioners in the Western world were taught via seminars in the beginning.
So even though,
for example, a student of today might be training with a teacher, a Western person who learned in the West, you know, Europe or U.S., and they might be in a school training with that person for 10 years. However, their teacher learned through seminars and didn't get a through line of, for lack of a better word, here's the white belt curriculum, here's the yellow belt curriculum, here's the green belt curriculum. It was, okay, we've got this kind of stuff and this kind of stuff and this kind of stuff and 12 attacks and disarms on each and blah, blah, blah. And it's all out of order because seminars have to be exciting to keep the audience.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So
exactly.
Even though those guys have schools today, they didn't learn how to teach the art. Now, the people who were like in Stockton, California in the 60s and 70s and 80s, they had these great teachers. Angel Cabalas and Leo Giron and Gilbert Tinio and Fresno, Ramiro Estelilia and you know, down in Los Angeles, you know, Ben Lagusa and Danny Nosanto. In Hawaii, you had all these Braulio Bedoy and Floro Villabrea. And on the East Coast in New York, you know, there was Remy Presas lived in Brooklyn for a while and Amante Morinas and Leo Gahe and Baltazar Sayoc, Chris Sayoc's dad. And, you know, so there was actually little pockets of Filipinos teaching actually Filipino styles before they got blended out.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, it all got blended out in seminars. And unless you lived in those little towns, not like L.A. is little or New York is little, but unless you lived in the town where those teachers were actually holding class, you were getting the seminar version, which doesn't mean the techniques weren't good. It just means that they were taught out of context of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly.
So you can have this disarm, which is a really cool disarm lock takedown, but if you don't know that that's the seventh one that's taught in a sequence of 15, you're just going to teach that anywhere in your curriculum. But
exactly.
What are the steps? Isn't there a stance and a range and a strike and a parry and a block and a control mechanism that you have to learn first before you get into it? And there's 3 or 15 or 7 that come before it because there's a process. But in the seminar, you're just getting everything thrown out on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no context for it.
Yeah. And I'd always wondered about that, you know, when I'd go, you know, do attend a seminar or something, you know, you know, there's been more than one person that would come at me with an angle 3 or something like that. But their stick would end up, they'd be striking with the first third of their stick, so their fist, their fist is closer to my head than the tip of the stick. I'm like, wow, where are you striking from? Why are you striking me like that if you're that close to me? You know,
right?
What are you doing? Hello, shanky. And I just figured, oh, well, you know, maybe this is their first day here or whatever. But it does turn out that you know, when I asked them. Yeah, well, not necessarily 15 years, but when I ask them, they go, oh, you know, I don't get much time to you know, study with an actual teacher or to train, so I come to the seminars.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I do think that seminars are great. I do.
Absolutely.
But I, you know, I agree that, you know, number one, if you're going to teach, learn the curriculum, learn your through line.
Learn the curriculum,
Learn the curriculum.
You know, the problem is that some of the Filipino, like Angel Cabalas' system was very well organized, but there's a lot of teachers who would just say, you do like this, you do like that. This one's very good, but then you could do like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, okay, like this, like that. That's not a curriculum. That's a demonstration, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to stay with the teacher in the traditional art long enough. And that long enough could just be a week, right? I mean, to get out of him just trying to show his art to you to get you to like it.
Right.
By showing you all the things he could do because he's trying to get converse because the art is still unknown at that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a person today at the seminar asking me, he's an Escrimador, and he said, and he's of the Serrata style, close range, smaller stick style. And I was showing him techniques with double sticks. He said, oh, is that Larcomano? And I just paused, like, why would you think that's Larcomano? I thought in my head. But I just paused for a minute because I wanted to give a thoughtful answer. And I said, you know what? Larcomano is both a range and a concept of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing a Larcomano technique in medium range.
Mm-hmm.
But Larcomano as a range, no. But largo mano meaning if am I direct striking you without blocking? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So in the Scream at Disarms book, I break down the four modes, what I call modes of engagement or methods of defense in Arnis or Scream. And the four, and it's based on the composition of the technique, and all Escrima techniques fall into one of those four categories. So mode one is direct strike, no block.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that in largo mano range. So the person gives you an angle one, and then you come like from underneath upper diagonal and hit his wrist, right? For example.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's direct hit to his body, his wrist, or you step off to the side and hit his head, you know, while he's chambering his strike or something. It's like direct hit, no block, no parry, no pass on the first move.
Mm-hmm.
I call that mode one. It could be in largo mano range, but it could be in close range, and it could be in medium range.
Mm-hmm.
How you apply it. It depends on your footwork and your position and your timing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a mode one technique, irrespective of range. Mode two technique is also hitting on the first beat, but your empty hand, they call the alive hand, let's pretend it's the left hand, say we're right-handed, is parrying or checking or passing the weapon
mm-hmm.
at the same time, right? So the motions are happening concurrently, but my weapon, main weapon, is striking the opponent's body
mm-hmm.
on the first blow. Okay, that's mode two. Those two are the most effective because they hit on the first beat. So they're the most direct for ending an encounter. Mode
mm-hmm.
three is my weapon would intercept your weapon, redirect, and then I counter, so there's no empty hand play in that one. So techniques like fry lay and rompida and different things where you're striking at my head, say, and I deflect your weapon up with my weapon, and
mm-hmm.
then I counter down. It's a two-beat move because I have to deflect and then hit, right? Tumbada is another example of the name of a technique that does that. And then mode four is the slowest. And that's where 90% of the escrima techniques and these techniques are, which are your inside block, roof block, umbrella block, shield block, drop stick, or punch block, whatever you want to call it, where my hand and my stick together both are stopping full force or moving against your attacking limb. So my two limbs are tied up on your one, and then I have to counter. And
mm-hmm.
in some styles, you hit, say, the stick, and then you check with your left hand, and then you hit with the stick to the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So stick on stick block, left hand check, and then stick hits your head. That's three beats, only one hit, right? And you
mm-hmm.
could say, like in Serrata style, it's two beats because you do your inside block and your check at the same time, and then I hit the body with the stick. So that's two beats for one hit. So
mm-hmm.
either way you slice it, it's a slower method because you're blocking and then countering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's mode
right.
four. So those four things, regardless of range. But the one that we're talking about, the mode four with the concurrent block, so your inside block, your outside block, your shield, your umbrella block, your whatever, payung, right? I mean, all of those are mode four techniques, and they're made for medium range. If you step closer than medium range with your two hands tied up on his one, his left hand or empty hand has free range at your ribs and belly and side,
mm-hmm.
right? If you're back further into long range, your left hand cannot check his weapon hand because the definition of long range is that your weapon can hit his furthest limb extension,
mm-hmm.
and my left hand can therefore not check it. So therefore, those techniques are made for medium range. But I see everybody coming into close range because they think it's close quarter combat means close range.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. It just means hand to hand, you know. And so largo mano is the long range, but actually I can do the mode one or direct striking technique from any range. It doesn't have to be in long range.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really just a poor understanding of what all of this means because it's all being taught as a blur.
Right.
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 It's all being taught as a blur, you know.
Yeah.
And it's mind-boggling to me that that's the state of it. Although the techniques everyone are doing are super cool techniques, there's this kind of foundational understanding that's missing in what is Filipino martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
what makes them most effective, you know. So,
agreed. Yeah, it seems that for the most part, the biggest advantage I found to seminars is, especially within FMA, is that it allows the proliferation of
right.
FMA. I mean, you
right.
know, when people, when
without
you,
it, we'd be
someone
dead.
Says
yeah.
stick, yeah, when someone says stick, people automatically assume, ooh, Kali, or whatever,
right.
you know, or FMA, which is great. But like you said, you know, it's kind of like a double-edged sword, you know.
Yeah.
The artists of the Philippines are, yes, very, very popular now, especially
right.
with, you know, the movies now. What movie was it that
yeah,
had...
Yeah.
That had
the Bourne Identity. The Bourne
yeah,
Jason Bourne
you.
Movies had a lot.
Yeah.
They were
I
awesome.
Mean, yeah. You know, a lot of
yeah.
people that would come through looking for Filipino martial arts, you know, would ask me, I want to learn
right.
stuff on the movie. And I'm
right.
like,
right.
wait a minute. Okay,
right,
that's
right,
great.
Right.
Wait, stop. Yeah. And it's great. But on the other hand, you know, I guess if there's anything that I hope listeners will get out of this show and all the great information that you gave is to, you know, find your base, to establish your
right.
base before you start building
right.
on it.
But it's
hey,
hard to find that in FMA now.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Because the base is the hodgepodge. The base is the hodgepodge for a lot of people, for
mm-hmm.
a lot of schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really...
Right.
And, you know, and because a lot of the teachers are it's hard to get a big group of students together just teaching Arnis or
yeah.
Scrima, you know, FMA, because they want, where's the empty hand? Where's the grappling? You know, where's the karambit technique? Where's the
yeah.
sticking to the leg and sweep technique? Oh, we have all that. We call it panantukan and dumag and blah, 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 blah. So before they used to just throw these names together to say we have it all,
mm-hmm.
you know. And these days, it's like if you don't, people don't, they have to go somewhere else to learn their empty hand stuff or their boxing
yeah.
stuff or their whatever. And you know, so people are making their money teaching seminars on FMA, but to keep the people interested in coming back, they have to keep showing new cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep showing new cool stuff, they end up spending their time developing new drills and permutations
mm-hmm.
of the drills, and how the single stick can translate to the sword, and that to the staff, and that to the gunting, and that to the karambit, and that to the roping, using rope to choke and take the person down with a handkerchief, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
like, that's really good and innovative, but that's not all Filipino martial arts.
And mm-hmm.
and if you're teaching always in that vein, the 500 people you might see in a year at your seminars, you know, who will stick with the art and be the teachers of the next decade
mm-hmm.
are not going to have a foundation in the art and know how to
yeah.
bring and teach it. Right.
Yeah. And,
right.
Yeah, and I'm hoping
happening.
That the exactly,
yeah.
and I'm hoping that the listeners, you know, do understand that, you know, stay with what you have if you have if you're learning Filipino martial arts and get your base, get you know follow the curriculum. Hey, you guys know what? We got through the whole 2 hours.
Wow.
Remember how we were
like,
what are we going to do? How are we going
to
do this?
I like
this?
That we got
two
to
hours.
Do it without me having to talk about myself. I
see,
like talking about
the question. Maybe you can read the question off our Facebook page.
Okay.
From Matt Henderson. But you know what's amazing? I threw my notes out about an hour ago because we never got to any of our questions.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, our new member, Matt Henderson, shout out to Matt Henderson, new
nice.
Member of our Dynamic Dojo radio show. He says,
man.
You know, yeah, he says, I know time's running out and you're in the middle of a discussion, but if you have time, who is your Nojokun Sifu? And relating to that, I know you have been around a lot of Goju-Ryu. Do you see similarities in the form and structure of the two? Also, when are you coming down this way, bro?
Okay.
We got
my
2 minutes.
Yeah, my Gochokun teacher is Grandmaster Alex Ko in the Philippines. He's a senior member of the Benkiam Athletic Association, which is the first Kung Fu school opened in the Philippines. It's 300 years old. The Chinatown is 300 years old. Well, actually, now it's probably 350 years old. And that school was opened up in the 1800s, straight line from Quanzhou in China, where the art came and was retransplanted into the Philippines. The style is very similar to the Okinawan styles of Wei Chi Ru and Goju Ryu because it has the Sam Chen form in it. And a lot of people who research the Okinawan arts pinpoint, for example, White Crane as one of the founding arts of Okinawan karate. And they have a Sam Chen form in that. We have 10 Chen forms in our system. And the five ancestors are five different systems, not five different people. And White Crane is one of the five ancestor systems that makes up the five ancestor fist. What was the question? Relating to Goju,
He wanted to know
yeah.
what the similarities were and when you're coming down.
Uh-huh. I'm coming down Sensei Henderson when you invite me down. And
ooh.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
And I mean that in a friendly way because we've been chatting on Facebook for quite a while. The Gochu is very good, and it is kata and kumite and kihon based, and the Gochu is also, but there's a lot larger curriculum in the five at the fest, much larger curriculum. I guess we're out of time. There it is.
Yeah. Wow.
We are.
We would love to have you on again. Because we didn't ask any of the questions that we wanted to like get to, but you know what? I'm really happy. Yeah, you know, I was really happy the way that the show went because
yes,
you know, like
absolutely.
I said before the show, we never know how it's going to go, and I kind of preferred this one.
This was a perfect example of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Guru Mark, and thank you, listeners, for all
thank
your
you,
questions.
And
well, see
you,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great
weekend.
Have
a good night, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Take care, girl. Bye-bye.
Thank you.